When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Because I remember, I think I went on Sky during that time, yeah. And I was like bigging you up, saying, Alex.
I think I saw that, you know. I think my boy said that. I'm gassed, bro. I love that, bro.
That was
the was giving you the positive PR. Yeah. The positive PR.
That was
PR.
The part of the plan to get you on the team, but yeah. Hello listeners and welcome back to another episode of the Beautiful Game Podcast. I'm your host Dot. I'm joined with my main man Dej. What are you saying to me?
I'm blessed, my bro. Obviously we're in Manny today, took the train down. Dot took man to Tati restaurant, got the XL rice and the lamb chops, but it was a good vibe, man, and we're here.
Bro, this is one that we've been pressing to try and do for a very, very, very long time. But before we introduce our special guest, I just want to plug the socials. Follow our TikTok at TBGpod, our Instagram at pod_TBG, and our Twitter at podcast_TBG. We are delighted to announce we are joined with Everton footballer Alex Owobi.
Welcome, 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 bro.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome, G.
Nah, love for coming on. As Dot was saying, bro, we've been pushing for this for like 18 months to 2 years. We've been speaking to like the big boss and like, listen, don't worry, you guys, you'll get Owobi. So to finally get it done, man, like, big up for coming.
Nah, I appreciate you lot coming down to Manchester. I know it's not easy.
Yeah, because we're from the ends, obviously, yeah. Similar area, yeah. You know, that trek down, yeah, that trek. Yeah, it's not easy.
Bro, for the love of this content, we've made a commitment this year that anywhere, whether it's Spain, France, Manchester, Scotland, we're there to record content.
Yeah, I respect that.
So yeah, man, to kick things off, take us back to the beginning, the humble beginnings.
Depends how far back you're trying to go, bro.
Far, far.
As in like grassroots.
Grassroots, let's start there.
So I started off playing in Newham, East London, for a team called Ripaway. And the manager, Steve McKenzie, took me like his son. Still talk to him to this day. Then from there, I had the decision to sign with either West Ham or Arsenal. So I was scouted from the age of 6, decided to choose Arsenal at the age of 9. Then the story just continues from there. Got my scholar, signed my professional contract, then made my professional debut at 19.
Okay, so when was that moment where you had that sort of knack of a talent? Because you know there's always that baller in the ends that you're like, oh, you know what, Alex, he's going to the top. Like, yeah, forget it. He's... Did you have that moment or were you sort of like a slow burner?
Slow burner. Like when I was young, I was always known in ends for he's a talented footballer, like he's gifted. Obviously my uncle played a part, he's a coach's nephew as well. But I'll probably say I realised that I had a chance in making it after like when I signed my first professional contract. That's when I thought, oh, I have a real chance of making it. Because every time before then, there's always saying, oh, there's always 1% chance that you're going to make it, sort of thing. But I say after my professional contract, I thought, yeah, I have a chance of making it.
Because you had like some knockbacks as well, getting released like twice. So talk to us about that, because people now will see Alex Iwobi, Everton, badding up the league. But you have to go through like some adversity. And I think we need to preach that side as well as the glitz and the glam that the media like to portray as well. Yeah, so talk to us about like the...
No, so when I was 14 and 16, I was 14, I had the talk with the head of the academy, and he said like, because I was one of the youngest in the team, because I was born in May in the school year. So they said, oh, like, you haven't grown and you're not physically developed like others. So you need to work on that. You need to work on your pace. And I got sent to one place in, I think it's like near Tottenham, called Lee Valley, just to work on my pace, like do extra running and that. Then, so yeah, they said they're going to let me go. But because of my technique, I was able to stay and push on. I wasn't playing like my own age group. I'd always be on the bench. Sometimes I don't even play. But they were patient with me, so I have to give them credit that they had faith in me. Then when I was 16, they said, like, you can sign your scholarship or you can leave. And that was a big setback because my age, I was playing for England at the time.
Yeah.
And everyone that got offered a scholar, or everyone that played for England got offered a scholar and a professional contract. I was the only one that didn't get that offer. So they were like, oh, if you want to leave, you can leave if you want. Like, we won't hold it against you. But I thought, nah, I've had all these obstacles before. I just like to prove my point, so decided to stay. And like I said, the story continues.
And how supportive were your parents? Obviously, having Nigerian parents, we know school, Sundays, church, tradition without fail. So how was it having like Nigerian parents?
I'm grateful for the parents I have, still support me to this day. They know how much I love football, so they've always pushed me. As much as it's hard to like balance football and schoolwork, they always understood when I'm coming home from training, I'm tired, I still have to do my homework, but they'll be onto me. But they understood like how much sacrifice I put into football, as well as I understood how much sacrifice they put in for me to get in the position I am today. So I have to give credit to them because they're very understanding.
What do you think that's because of your uncle? Because obviously JJ Koch, I think most people know,
yeah.
Obviously JJ Koch is your uncle. So they've seen the pathway that, listen, this is where this career path can lead to. So do you think that had an influence or were they just always like that?
Of course it had an influence. Especially, I know my uncle is wanted me to follow the football path as well. My dad wanted to play football when he was younger, but of course in Nigeria it was difficult to progress as well as my uncle did, for example. But the opportunity was there and they saw how hungry I was to be a footballer, so they always understood and always gave me that motivation to try and work as hard as I can. So I'm forever grateful.
So talk to us about the process of like getting that first pro contract at Arsenal. How was it? How did it feel?
So I got my offer when I was 18. Some people get early, like I say, scholar and pro. Some people get 17, but I got at 18 because Arsenal, I have to give, I'm thankful for Arsene Wenger, because they always give like the youngsters opportunities to train with the first team. Like whether it's international break, obviously there's always a lot of players going away. So the ones that don't go away will always be around to cater for the players that are not involved. So I always had the opportunity to go train. And even like Vartel was even there at the time. So like they always used to take care of us. And every time I trained, I feel like I did okay. And Wenger always chat to me and say, you're doing well, just be patient, your time will come. So yeah, from then, and then playing on the 21s and doing well. And I played in numerous positions as well. So Arsene Wenger understood that I understand the game and that I'm able to play in any position I'm asked and don't complain. So yeah, it was good. It was good from there that I got my opportunity to kick on myself. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, so like obviously you said that, you know, when you were in the under 21s, you were going to train with the senior team. And you said that you actually trained with Mikel Arteta. So like back then, did you see that leadership qualities in him?
Yeah. When I first went up, he was a bit intimidating because like I remember the one time I was training right back and I was doing okay, could have done better, but I've never played right back before. And he just go on to me, he said, drop, get the ball, play quicker. And like it's like, rah, like I don't even like this position too tough.
Yeah.
But he's always had that like that vocal voice that he always wants to demand more from me. From anyone, no matter how old you are. So you can see he's even working to this day, like he's working for Arsenal. So he's always had that leadership quality, you know.
Yeah, talk to us a bit about Arsene Wenger, because he's obviously a legend. He's retired for a few years. Like what sort of influence did he have on you, bringing you into the first team?
To start with, he's not one that speaks a lot, but when he does, a lot of wisdom comes with it. Boy, you can tell that's someone that's experienced with the game. But yeah, like every time I come up, he would always say to me, like, relax and take your time, that your chance will come sort of thing. And like, he always tell me, oh, I'm going to try to play you centre mid. I'm going to try to play up front and just like try to learn the game a bit more before your chance comes. So when I go back to play 21s, I was playing up front. was playing centre mid, I was playing on the left, playing on the right, I was playing everywhere. So he always used to advise me on what to do to like improve my game.
Yeah, so obviously moving on, you broke into the first team. How was that feeling, like making the step up from being a youth player into that senior environment?
I can't exactly remember, but I, like for example, I remember like my first preseason tour, going to Singapore. That was crazy. Like you feel like a first team player. You're just traveling with them, doing things they do, and you realize it's not much different to like the academy side. It's just that like they're more mature and they're carrying themselves like grown men, sort of thing. So when I'm moving to the change rooms and like it's like it was still they're still human sort of thing. Like you don't see them as like. Obviously, people see them as idols, but you come to learn that they're just like you, sort of thing. But so the transition weren't hard, especially like I had people like Chamberlain, Welbeck, yeah. Walcott, Kieran Gibbs. They were always talking to me to make sure like I ease them very well, and like Coughlin as well, always helping me. So like I don't feel out of place. I don't feel like just be myself, sort of thing. So that helped a lot.
Yeah. So now you've arrived. You've gone to the preseason tour. You're making your debut. Like, talk to us about what that felt like, because that's everyone's dream as a kid. Let me be on Match of the Day, Super Sunday. Like, that's you. You're living that life. So talk to us about that moment.
So my first actual debut, some could say is one to forget, but we played in the cup game against Sheffield Wednesday and we lost 3-0. However, like, I feel like I've done well. Like, even though it wasn't the result we wanted, and we lost to a team that's, I think, in the championship then. Like, I still went out of my head held high, sort of thing. And the players around me said, like, you did well despite the result, just keep on going. Then got my chance against Swansea, even though it was like 3 minutes. And then from then, like, I was able to play against in the Champions League against Barcelona, and then played against Everton. So it was just all happening so fast. But like, where you train with them and the quality of Arsenal is always, the standard's always high. You just prepare for like the Premier League or the Champions League. So like, Arsenal's one of the best teams in the world, especially back then as well, that it's almost easy going into the games because you prepare for it like almost like every day at training. So it wasn't too difficult for me.
It's actually mad because, correct me if I'm wrong, you actually played 100 Premier League games for Arsenal, correct?
Yeah.
And like, what made you come to the decision where you felt, to progress my career, I may need to move on?
It wasn't an easy decision, but it was very, very quick. It happened like in a matter of like 30 minutes. So obviously I was overseas after AFCON, thinking I'm still going to be an Arsenal player, on holiday with my parents in Dubai. Then got a call from my agent saying, oh, Everton are interested. Like, what do you think? Then it just fell through. Like, oh, it's not going to happen, not going to happen. And literally the last couple hours of transfer deadline day, like, get a call again saying, oh, like, Everton are really interested, like they're trying to push this move. And like, I've never felt that someone that wants me that bad, that like, to come. Even spoke to the manager at the time, Marco Silva, said that we have a position for you, that you're going to play behind the striker. Like, I know that's the position you want to play. So
great sales pitch.
Like, if he was a salesman, like, he would do well still. Like, he sold me. He said, yeah, if you come, like, just work hard and do what you do. Like, you always create chances for Arsenal. Like, just have to bring that to Everton. And like, I spoke to my dad, and my dad wasn't too keen on it because he knows Arsenal's always been home. However, I wanted to have that, my own legacy. I don't want to be like that kid that's just the academy product. I want to produce, like, I want to come as like a grow up as a man as well, challenge myself, sort of thing.
So is this like, was this a situation where this was like lingering in your head for a certain period of time?
No,
so,
not even.
So how long was the interest, like from interest to you signing?
Okay, 3 days.
Okay, so was it one of those ones where Arsenal said, we've received, I don't know, £35 million bid, we think you should go, or we've received the £35 million bid, it's up to you? Was it more of a nudge, or the decision's in your hands?
We've received the bid. Within the first 3 days, the first day, received the bid. It wasn't obviously what the bid was initially at the end, but they said, nah, that we don't want you to go. Unai Emery really likes your sort of play. You were influential last season, or the season before. You had your best season according to stats and creating chances. So he doesn't want you to go. And it was literally, my last game was Europa League final.
Yeah, he scored.
And I scored. Yeah, and he said to me, like, oh, like, it's a shame I didn't start you sort of thing. Yeah. Like, I want to hear it next season. So then from the first day to the last day, obviously Everton pushed and pushed and pushed. And like Arsenal just signed a new winger.
Pepe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they signed a new player. And there was a few players that were still there on like, they weren't ready to go sort of thing. I'm not going to say names, but they weren't ready to go. So they said, oh, like,
this is trying to rack his brain.
I know he's trying to rack his brain. I'm not going to say names, innit?
Yeah.
But like, so yeah. Like they said, oh, like, we've received a bid from you, it's a high bid. We're not going to get this money from anywhere else sort of thing. Like,
so it was a sort of nudge that...
nudge, like, it's a winger as well. That someone's probably going to play in your position. Like, it's up to you sort of thing. So I thought, okay, cool. They're giving me that. And Everton's a club that's also a very big club that wants me. I want a new challenge, so why not pursue it?
So, like, obviously, like, the dust is settled. That was, like, 3 and a bit years ago. What's your feelings towards that situation? Because from speaking to you, like, in these brief minutes, you're always someone that's had to prove yourself. There's setbacks, yeah, then you bounce back, setback, bounce back. So, like, now that the situation's not, like, raw and fresh, like, looking at how do you feel in terms of how that situation was handled?
Me, I'm the sort of guy that lives with no regrets. So, like, once this happened. I don't like to dwell on it. What's even funny is that I didn't have a house or an apartment then, and I was staying in a hotel that teams always stay at before away games.
Yeah.
And Arsenal was staying in the same hotel, like, maybe 3 weeks after that transfer deadline day. So I've seen the whole team. I've seen the whole team, and I've seen Unai Emery, and he spoke to me saying, like, it wasn't my decision sort of thing. I still respect you as a man, respect you as a player, but I just want to wish you all the best sort of thing. And like, that for me, like, it sat well with me. And I thought, oh, okay, cool. Like, I have that respect for the team sort of thing. Because I didn't even get to say goodbye. Once the deadline was done, I just had to dash up to...
Yeah, so how is that experience as well? Because we're fans, we sit down and watch transfer deadline day and say, oh, Everton launch bid for Alex Iwobi. The club are considering it, player en route for medical, all that kind of stuff. So how is it being part of that?
Bro, it was weird because I'm overseas. I'm on holiday. I'm literally just baking off and even battling signal to answer phone calls.
What, that Lagos Express road? No, in Nigeria.
No, this was Dubai. You know Dubai, you need that VPN for FaceTime and all that jazz. So like, yeah, no, to get phone calls and obviously data. I'm stingy, you know, I'm proper Nigerian, stingy with data. So I'm counting the bills as well. But yeah, no, it's just crazy. So like, even my medical was done different because I was overseas. I didn't have enough time to do it. And just getting off the boat, because I was on a boat trying to just chill.
Yeah, I'm really
dash off
enjoying
the boat,
soft life, yeah.
So, bro, for my family, bro. So yeah, man, I had to sign things and yeah, it was a lot. So I didn't even have the chance to like come back to the training ground and say bye. I just had to get, like, things already getting sent to me and just had to move up to the hotel and move up to Everton.
So bro, like, but how does that make you feel? Because like, we've seen players saying that, you know what, I spent all my life at this club and I didn't really get a goodbye. Makes me feel a bit sad towards the club. So sitting back now, how do you feel towards the club in regards to your departure?
I have no bad blood. Me, I'm not one that holds grudges, holds anything against anyone. I just like to see the positive. Like, I have that perspective. Like, Arsenal made me. So like, I'll always be grateful. I'll always see it as home. As much as Everton's my home now, I always see Arsenal as home. So I don't hold anything bad against them.
And you never even know what can happen in the future. You know, we've seen stories where you end up back at your boyhood club. You understand? But anyway, let's move forward to the future. Everton, big money move. Obviously, people say 35 million, whatever it is. Day one, Marco Silva, Finch Farm training. Chat to us.
Day one. Obviously, come back from AFCON late. So I'm one of the last players to arrive. Everyone's really fit. But my fitness was actually okay. And I don't think he expected that. So then I've trained well, and I've trained me. I'm a very good training player. I don't know what it is. I'm a very, very good trainer. I give that to myself, innit? I treat training as if it's like power league sort of thing.
Yeah.
So
we see you in those BTs and you're ripping up. You see that?
So he's seen that. And obviously in training, I was playing in midfield a lot. Like he promised me sort of thing. So like, I was able to express myself and train really well. But at the time, it was difficult to play in that position because there was someone in that position that was doing well at the time. So
who was that? Was that
Gylfi Sigurdsson?
Oh yeah.
He was doing very well in that position. So I ended up playing on the left as an inverted winger sometimes, and yeah, it was a slow start, but yeah, it is what it is.
So do you see your favourite position as that centre midfield sort of player?
Yeah.
Okay, so is that like something that Everton almost like promised you on signing, that you will be played in centre mid, or was it one of those?
Yeah, okay. Something I got promised, to be fair. I got promised still.
Yeah. But in terms of, obviously, Everton have moved on managers, and a promise with one manager doesn't follow through.
Even that same manager, like, as much like Marcus Silva, I really respect him because he tried to fit me into his plans. I didn't really play centre mid for him. I played on the left back.
I think that was the game against Aston Villa. I remember you were doing damage. I remember there was a game.
I think that was my debut for them.
Yeah. I saw your number 10, yeah.
Yeah, but so obviously there's different managers, different styles, different ways that he wants the team to go forward, so... Me, I've always been that guy, like, I'll just adapt to play wherever. That's one thing that I'm grateful for Wenger. He's made me learn the game in different positions. So, it's
okay. Is that a positive and a negative? Because a manager can just say, like, under Carlo, right wing back, left mid, 6, 8, behind the 10. So it's like, how do you kind of find the identity that, listen, I'm a number 10, I played 30 games there, these are my stats. Whereas if there's an injury, okay, Alex, you can fill in there, you can...
It's something I've had to deal with all my life, so it don't really faze me anymore. Even now, I'm playing right mid again. I'll be honest, it is what it is, isn't it? But like, something I've had to deal with my whole life. I'm playing right mid for my national team. I'll probably play centre mid. Whereas even when like the previous manager, Frank Lampard, I wouldn't know where I'm gonna play before games. I could end up playing centre mid, right wing back. But like, one thing about me, I'll just do what I'm told to do, sort of thing.
Talk to us about playing under Frank Lampard. How was that?
He doesn't agree with it, but I feel like he revitalized and saved my career a bit, because I was going through a tough time at Everton. I wasn't playing. When I'm playing, I'm not doing too well. And even when he got appointed, I was in AFCON, and that's when I got a red card and we went out. So I was just thinking,
We were stressed when Nigel, what was that? Don't even want to remember that game.
Honestly, bro.
Yeah.
So, what?
Yeah, that stress,
the pain, what? I was off my phone. Obviously, because I was going through a tough time, AFCON, I'm going to have to come back to Everton. I'm just thinking, what am I going to do? Like, I might not even be playing, sort of thing. But I said,
was that the game when they had like bare sick?
Yeah, COVID cases.
Tunisia had this is that Hannibal guy had a red card and there's COVID. Yeah. There's so many things going on.
Anyway, we'll get to Nigeria.
We'll get to Nigeria. All right, cool. So I'll come back now. And like, I don't know what to expect, but once again, I'm a very good training player, and he's seen what I'm able to do in training. So like, the assistant coaches, like, for example, I think, was it Joe was speaking to me, saying,
Joe Edwards for context.
Appreciate him so much as well, saying, why don't you do this in matches, sort of thing. Like, I'm not understanding it. Like, in training, you're very good. And I said, like, it's been the job I've been told to do, like, previously, just give it to other players, one or two touch. So be a man, carry the game, sort of thing. So when they're seeing in training, then they gave me the opportunity, I think, Brentford against Leeds. I started against Leeds and I did well. They said, continue. But then there was a lot of injuries in midfield. And he said, Frank asked me, where do you prefer to play? And I've told him. And he said, okay, cool, we're going to give it a try. And like, ever since he gave it a try, I think it was against, might have been Burnley or West Ham. And like, I did very well and I progressed from there. So he's like, just continue. Ever since then, like, I just found a run of form and I'm comfortable playing in my preferred position. So like, ever since then, I just kicked on.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that he kind of revitalized your career, because Frank Lampard's a young manager. And obviously in his Chelsea spell, people said that maybe a lack of communication with players led to his downfall. But how did you sort of find dealing with him as a man, like in terms of the information you're receiving? Because obviously we have to remember he was one of the best midfielders in this country. So like, picking his brain, extracting that info, how was it?
Yeah, like, it's nice. I remember when he first got appointed and we were doing shooting, you know, like edge of the box shooting, people say, Frankie Lampard, so everyone's getting gassed off him. But him as a, because I respect him so much as a player and as a man, like when he's giving advice, you proper listen. So he spoke to me a lot, because obviously I play midfield and he wants me to get the stats that I'll try and improve my stats the way he improved his. So he did help me, but it's not just him, like Joe Edwards, Ashley Cole, Paul Clement.
So how is that dynamic? Because obviously we see Lampard heading the team. Obviously there's Ashley Cole, Paul Clement, Joe Edwards. How did they work in unison? Was one of the other coaches the voice in the changing room, or how did it work in that dynamic?
Nah, like, See, this is the thing about Frank Lampard. Like, as much as he's the manager, he likes to hear what not just his staff have to say, but the players. Like, he wants it to be like a big, like a team, like a family, like a bond. Like, that's one thing that, like, everyone appreciate about him. So, like, he's not just him. He wanted everyone's opinion to try and make the team grow. So, like, he would say a few words. Seamus Coleman would say a few words. Then everyone has a voice. That's what he gave. Like, he gave the platform for everyone to talk. So it was good.
It's actually mad because, like, a lot of the criticism that was almost labelled at him was, like, he didn't get the fans. Like, how do you feel his relationship was with the Everton fans when he was in the managerial position?
I don't know. I don't know if I can agree with that. I don't know because I see it from a different point of view. So I thought the fans appreciated him because he always worked hard, tried to engage with the fans as much as he could. But us as players, we took it on ourselves that we're not doing enough for not just him, not just for the fans, but for ourselves. We're not putting on a performance. We're not getting the results. So, like, that's the one thing the fans only appreciate if you're doing well.
Of course, yeah, as everyone says, the cliche, it's a result.
It's the results.
If you're not getting the results, no matter how your relationship, exactly. The fans will be on to you.
Of course. That's it. But it's not just, I think it's everywhere.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's one thing, like, if you're not getting results, unfortunately, the manager's the one that's going to hold the blame. Mm-hmm. But us players, we took the responsibility in saying that we didn't serve him well enough, but that's just football, unfortunately.
Yeah, I thought, obviously I was tracking Everton's results, then after the Brighton game at Hull, when I think it was at 4-0, I was like, listen, this is looking inevitable. Yeah. And the position was becoming a bit untenable. But in terms of the last game against West Ham, when you played away and obviously you lost that game, then obviously Frank was dismissed. Did you feel that pressure going into that game that, listen, we're potentially fighting for our manager's job here?
I don't feel like we saw it like that. We just saw it like, we saw every game that we need to get points no matter what. Away, obviously, our away record's never been great.
Yeah.
So, like, we just see we need to get at least a point. West Ham, they're in a similar position. Even the game before, Southampton, they were in a similar position, but they both beat us. And that's when, after that game, and then the manager's going for, oh, now, like, we all had a meeting with ourselves, with the staff, like, we need to buckle up, I need to improve, sacrifice whatever's going on outside of football, put everything into the club and just move on, sort of thing, and try and do your best and look at it. What was the phrase? I think Seamus said, look at yourself in the mirror. Something along those lines, look at yourself in the mirror, come to training and give your all. Like, he gave like a mad speech. Yeah. Not if it's sunken, but like, I took it, and ever since then, like, obviously new managers come, everyone's putting 100% in training, 110% in training.
Because when the manager was going to get sacked, I remember after the game, obviously I watched Sky Sports, Farhad Mashiri was there. They asked him, oh, is that Frank Dunn? And he's like, listen, I don't know. I don't make the decisions. But how did the players gather that the manager was sacked?
How was it done again? I think we found out before even coming to training. And we go into training and obviously the technical directors come and spoke to us and said, like, whoever we're playing, like, no matter what ideas they bring, no matter what, because we just heard it could be Bielsa, it could be Sean Dash, like, we didn't know who was going to come in. Like, whoever comes in, just buckle up, buy into the ideas. If you don't like the ideas, you have to leave.
Okay, like,
everyone has to be on board with whatever the manager has to say. So, yeah, and everyone took that, buckled up, and we're moving.
What, so did Frank get any opportunity to say goodbye? Was there any sort of face-to-face?
Nah, sadly, nah. He didn't get an opportunity, no.
Wow.
Cutthroat.
So during that period, like, how difficult was it? Because I remember, I think I went on Sky during that time and I was like bigging you up saying, Alex.
I think I saw that, you know. I'm gassed. I'm laughing at that, bro.
That was giving you the positive PR.
I'm dead. So, like, at the time, how was Goodison Park? Because, again, I said it on Sky. When you go Goodison Park, it's a tight pitch.
Yeah.
It's the crowd getting onto you. It's the pressure.
Yeah.
Everton players running through brick walls, which you do every week. How difficult was it to play at Goodison Park?
I don't know. I can only speak for myself. I don't really hear the noise when I'm playing football.
Mm.
But, like, one thing that's stored in my mind before going into games, and I had to learn that, is that Evertonians, they just love, like, it don't even matter. Obviously, it does matter. You have to have the ability, but they just care about heart, heart and hard work.
That's the Scouse culture, though, isn't it? Like, honest living, that work hard. Even if you lose, you've worked
literally,
hard.
Literally, so I had to learn that. I learned to probably say the hard way. It took me a couple of years to learn that and adapt it to my game. Because I've come from a club that's used to having the ball, like let the ball do the running. So now a lot of running without the ball that I had to adapt to my game. So yeah, I've added that to my game and held a few positive comments from it.
Yeah, so again, obviously we want to talk about you, but I think Everton fans will want us to talk about the ownership situation. Farhad Mashiri, there's been some toxicity from the fans towards the board, and that spilled onto the pitch. Like we saw on Twitter, I think it was Anthony Gordon getting ducked down in his palm.
Oh, I remember that.
Yerry Mina getting stopped, and like fans were like, oh, he's got kids in the car, stop. Yeah. Like for you, when you're seeing all of that madness, like what are you thinking? And also, did you experience any sort of personal incidents?
For example, the Yerry Mina thing, like, you have to be mindful, like, you can't just go abuse of someone's car. There's a ute in the car, like, but like, fans, they sometimes don't see it. And obviously the Anthony Gordon thing, he was by himself and he's not giving no one no attention. Like, I don't know what you expect us to do, like come and fight back, come and say, like, obviously everyone, including Anthony Gordon, works hard for the team. They might not see it, but us players appreciate what he does for the team. But that's the thing about fans, they need to understand that it's not just them going through it. We're all going through it as a club, like we're all going through that same pain. So me personally, no, I ain't had like nothing crazy. My friends ain't had nothing crazy. Even my mum and dad, they like, they try to avoid going to the games just in case, because they never know what's going to happen. But no, nothing too crazy has happened.
No, thank God, man.
So obviously the new manager comes in, Sean Dyche. What's changed? Because for me, from the outside looking in, is come into the dressing room, you run through brick walls. Yeah. It's just as simple.
What's the saying? Minimum requirement. Yeah,
maximum effort.
Oh,
you might know about that, yeah?
Yeah, bro. Right. Dyche.
Yeah. Before every game. Sometimes even before training, before every game on a PowerPoint slide, that would get slapped in.
Okay.
In bold.
Serious.
Yeah. He says
what, under the new regime, under Sean Dyche?
Yeah, Sean Dyche. Ever since
he's that's he's playing. Saying, that's his motto.
Yeah.
That's what he, that's his guiding minimum principle.
Minimum requirement, maximum effort. That gets slapped in bold. But it'd be easier to say what stayed the same. The food. That's probably the food. Because everything, we have to train with shin pads now, train with high socks, no hats, no snoods.
Serious.
Yeah. The fine system is different. Even like build up before games, like normally you stay in a hotel before a game, especially home games. Don't do that no more.
What, home to the stadium basically?
Yeah. So
that's like a throwback though. That's like back in the day.
I think his way of football, like he just wants to strip down everything, go back to basics, which I understand.
Yeah,
I understand. Like even if he's probably watching this, he's like, why am I wearing a hat indoors? You're not allowed to wear hats indoors. So like, yeah, like, he just stripped it down, just back to basics. Football, hard work, literally.
Yeah, and we've seen the results. Like obviously his first game was against people are making the favourites of the Premier League. Arsenal, you got that 1-0 win and people from the outside will be like, typical Dyche win. 1-0, header, set piece goal, keep a clean sheet.
Yeah.
So what's been he's like, because there's this whole thing with Mikel Arteta about non-negotiables. For Sean Dyche, what's his non-negotiables, would you say?
Oh, he had it on the slide as well.
It's like you've been going to uni with him, innit?
Oh, it's almost like college. But he just wants us to work. Like, work hard, have the right equipment for getting. Like, however you approach a game, you have to approach it in training sort of thing. Just have to run. You have to treat every day like it's your last sort of thing. So, like, it is good. Like, we had to slowly buy into it. But, like, you don't take no prisoners. So, even if you're not playing and you're a sub, and even if you're not in the squad, he's making sure everyone's on point.
So in terms of like approach from Lampard and Sean Dyche, how would you sort of say they differ as men?
Obviously, Frank Lampard was way more relaxed, I could say that. He was way more lenient in the sense that we can like, in terms of like, you can come to training, I can come to train like this. I can't come to train like this. Obviously, they've got two different
stuff. What does that mean? Like, does it mean anything, like, in terms of, oh, you can dress like, does it make any difference? Like,
no, it's just his way, isn't it?
Something. Yeah, yeah.
For example, like, he said it the first day he got a point, because you know we have people like Tom Davis that like
expressively dressed. BCL as well. Yeah.
Pointed those two out, said, I'm sorry if this is gonna offend you guys, but like, I want you guys to get me. So like, yeah, like that's how he is, like he's straight to the book, innit? Yeah. Whereas Frank Lampard, like, he didn't mind how Dele used to dress, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
As so long as sure Glenn Hoddle say something about like Dele,
yeah, being pulled from the slums or something.
Like,
yeah,
he doesn't care as long as you're doing on the pitch.
Okay.
Whereas like Sean Dash will probably want us to represent at all times, sort of thing.
Mm.
Where when you're outside, he said, when you're outside the training ground, you don't care. But once you come into the training ground, strip all that, you're a football player, like you're one of everyone, sort of thing.
Yeah, I think obviously that's probably by the results we can say it's working, because you guys are performing weekend, you just beat Brentford, you beat Arsenal, you've been getting some decent results. So like, in terms of going forward, Everton, obviously, it's a relegation battle. We have to be honest, like at the bottom, from 12th to the bottom,
mm-hmm,
it's nip and tuck, it's tight.
Yeah, very tight.
You understand? So like, how has that mindset shift been for you? Because you've been at Arsenal, like, listen, if you don't win, it's a crisis. Whereas Everton, is that like you might win here, you might draw once, lose. It's that, how has that been?
It's been an emotional roller coaster. I could say that. Especially last season, boy, that was a lot of stress. But this season, like, what we find annoying is because we know we have the ability to beat teams, and we see it every day in training. Like, the quality in the teams, like, it's crazy. We've got so many international players as well, like players that played and won different cups, different divisions. So like, the quality and the standards is always high. It's just bringing it out on a consistent basis. That's what we need to what we're demanding more, what he's demanding more. And with Sean Dash, he knows the ability is there. He just first of all said we need to, like, obviously our running stats have improved a lot. As long as we're able to do that,
you're one of the top ones. You're one of them personally.
That's one of my hidden talents that can run. So yeah, no, and obviously on day one he realized that training, he done yo-yo test. Everyone's faces, what? Even me, I was shocked because it was a long weekend off and he got appointed. Thinking, yay, I'm not ready for this. But yeah, nah, he just appreciates people that work hard and he knows we have the ability, so he said the ability will come through.
Yeah, so speak to us about one of your teammates, Amadou Onana, because when I watch him, I tell Dej, can be anything in the world.
Baller.
Yeah. Have he caught your eye?
Yeah, of course. Like, from day, he's a big character. You'd forget he's only like 21 or 22. Mm. You'd actually forget that. Well, he carries himself like a grown man. Like, he's very influential on the side. Like, he has a big voice. He's one that he tries to say he don't, but he plays for the fans. Like, he make a tackle.
Lapping it up. Yeah,
all the time. So, like, yeah, he's a big character in the change room. And, like, we know the ability he has. Like, we want him to do well, want him to work hard every day. And even the managers, sometimes it comes across like the manager's always picking on him, but the manager said to him like he has his best interest, like he wants him to improve as much as we all want him to improve. We all want to improve as a team. So like, yeah, quality player, very, very, very good, and there's a lot more to come. That's the scary thing.
So what about DCL? Because like a lot of Everton fans, they kind of pin their hopes on him. It's like, obviously you've got Neil Maupay, but I think DCL sort of seen as that figurehead. Like, if we can keep him fit for like 10 to 15 games, and especially the way Sean Dyche wants to play with Dwight McNeil whipping them in, new servicing balls, you've got a chance of staying up. So how pivotal is DCL?
Unfortunately, yeah, we've had to play without him. Now, everyone sees his ability. That's why he was getting into the England side. He had that great season where he scored a lot of goals for Everton. But the only problem with him is maintaining fitness, and it's so sad. Like, we know how hard he's working to try and come back. There's always a setback that's always in his way, which we all know is not easy mentally, and for him it must be very mentally challenging. So like, we all know what he brings to the team. I know Sean Dash knows what he brings to the team. We just want him to get back, but we're not, I don't feel like they're rushing his recovery that quick because they want him to be 100% fit. So like, yeah, nah, but the only thing is I feel sorry for him because he's always picking up niggles when he's feeling good.
Yeah.
So yeah, nah, just hope he's back soon, man. But regardless, like, we've been able to get results without him. Like we've had Neil Mopay that's been working hard. Even though he ain't been getting the goals that he wants to.
Even Sims as well against Liverpool. He's trying his hardest.
And then like even that now we've got Dimi up front. Demiray up front.
Yeah,
like we know the ability that he has as well going forward. Like so as much as like we do miss Dom, we still have ability in other players up front.
So talk to us about your personal season, because I speak to Everton fans, they're DMing me. They're like, oh, you don't need to get Alex Iwobi on, he's our player of the season kind of thing. Like, he's been the only player that's performed to a standard or befitting of Everton shirt. Those are some of the comments that I've received. So in regards to yourself, where do you see yourself in terms of your season so far?
Me, I've always been the player that's been able to create chances for the team. So like, as long as I'm creating chances and trying to help my team win, like that's why it like I got signed to Everton at the start.
You know what's mad? It's like when you're playing against Liverpool, I'm just like, why is Alex trying so hard?
Yeah,
I'm at Liverpool.
Yeah, should have said that at the end, man. Yeah, why are you saying that?
Come on, bro. You can't say that in mid-podcast, bro. Come on, bro.
I'm just like, this guy's giving us a long day today. You get me, but yeah, go on.
But yeah, so like once I was able to add the hard work to my game, and also I started off the season playing in midfield, very comfortable. So I was creating chances, managed to rack up 7 assists overall before Sean Dash came. So like I felt like I was having a great season. Of course, I've been moved out wide on the right to do a job for the team, try and create. But I just find it easier creating. And when you're in midfield, you get the ball a lot more, you get the opportunity to do a lot more. But it's something you have to do for the job, do a job for the team. So I do understand, but like yeah. I feel like Evertonians, they just appreciate hard work, and where I've been able to add a few assists to the team, they're grateful and appreciate it.
Because it's mad. I remember like there was a part during the season where I was looking on Sky, top of the assists, Kevin De Bruyne, Alex. I was like, raw, Alex is doing his thing. Like, so how does that feel to like be in and amongst that company? Because De Bruyne, he's like, he's one of the top, you know, he's going to go down in the Premier League Hall of Fame.
100%. So to even be up there, I like to challenge myself. I don't like to just settle on where I am. I'm trying to even improve and get more. As much as it is, I find it a bit more difficult out wide, I still try and get my numbers. It doesn't matter what position, I still try to get my numbers. But I feel like I'm joint fifth now or something.
Yeah, sixth, isn't it? You got the same as Odegaard,
as
Odegaard. So what, you're checking the stats as well?
I'm trying to get up there, bro.
Is that a goal at the start of the season? I need X amount of assists.
I wouldn't give myself a target to reach. I just go into a game thinking, try and create a chance or a few chances for my teammates and even try and get a goal myself, sort of thing, anything for the team. So, but yeah, like it's always a bonus when you get an assist. But yeah, no, I do check still. I confess I do check.
Yeah, because like up until this point or in recent times, you've been seen as that connector, the guy that gives the ball to the person.
If there was a such thing as a pre-assist, I'll be the king. I hope people are watching.
That's coming.
I don't know. If it'll come too late. Don't get appreciated. But yeah, that's why it's vital to get the assist. That gets recognised more.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about in terms of Everton as an infrastructure. I know Jamie Carragher sort of said that it's the worst run club in the Premier League, that it's almost like a cemetery for players. Like I know players that have gone there for big money and it's not worked out. In terms of you've got the eye in terms of looking at Arsenal holistically, how it's run. That was probably known as the best well-run club in England. And obviously Everton are sort of being compared to the worst. Where do you think Everton can learn from Arsenal in terms of how to run the club? Because as you said, when you look at your squad, that's not a relegation team, bro.
Yeah.
That's top 10, in my opinion, comfortably. So something's gone wrong.
To pinpoint what's gone wrong is very difficult. I think it's just a mental thing, me personally. I think it's just a mental thing. Like, now, which is what we added to the game, the extra yards of, like, defending for the team, trying to score for the team. Like, maybe before that was probably lacking that desire and passion. But
yeah, because your team, like, it's like when you weigh up the science, it doesn't make sense. Yeah. It's like you're watching, it's like you're looking at the team, bro. Anana, Gay, the core, that midfield, that's like got everything quality. Yeah. Thou shall not pass, you can't break through that. Midfield, you've got yourself, Damari Gray, Seamus Coleman, Connor Cody, Tarkowski,
Yeah.
Bro, it's a team.
Yeah.
Pickford, like, it doesn't, something.
That's why I feel like now we do believe in ourselves. That's why the results are coming. And as well as that, the hard work is now getting added.
Mm.
So I think that's the only thing that was missing. Because realistically, like you said, we were able to beat Arsenal, top of the league. We can compete against any team. Against Man City, we got a draw 1-1 at the Etihad.
Mm.
If we're able to do that, then any team, like, we should be able to compete and get a result. So it's just that mindset of, like, because I don't know what it is, but if we have that mindset like we did against Arsenal at home, then we could do well this season or end the season strong.
What does pressure do? Like, maybe when you look at teams down there in the bottom and you ain't got confidence and you're playing with pressure and you just feel like everything just feels a bit heavy, is that maybe a factor that's probably you've experienced this season as a team?
Yeah, because you're just like, especially when we lost to like Southampton and West Ham before Frank left, just thinking where are the points going to come from,
yeah,
sort of thing. I remember everyone, the training, that whole week when he got dismissed, that week everyone was just deflated thinking, what's going to happen? Like, how are we going to come out of this? But then, yeah, like after the technical directors gave us that chat, we just had to switch on, and when Seamus gave that speech, we have to switch on and sacrifice everything for the club. And ever since then, I can't tell you what it is. I think it's just, that's why it's just a mental thing, me personally, where it's like everyone's tuned in and bought into the ideas of that we need to work hard for the club, run, tackle, sacrifice everything. And yeah, it's been working.
So in terms of from the leadership, as I mentioned, Bill Kenwright, Farhad Mashiri, did they have sort of direct lines of communication to the changing room? Because I think when people, all these experts sort of look at Everton, they are ownership, it's not in sync. So as players, do you feel, I don't know, adequately supported by the board?
Mashiri's come in once since I've been at Everton. He just gave a small speech and left. Bill Kenwright gave an emotional speech when Frank Lampard was appointed, or was around. And that, obviously, I don't know about Mashiri, but I know Bill Kenwright. Like, even, I think he's messaged me a couple of times as well.
Oh, messaged you? What's happened like that?
No, I messaged.
Okay. he's not on WhatsApp. Bill's not at that age.
I don't know if it's I messaged. Might have just been a message. Yeah, it is a greeting. But, like, yeah, no, he messaged, like, saying he appreciates the work. So, like, I know he even explained his story. Like, he supported Everton from a kid. Like, he just wants Everton to do well.
Mm.
And even when he gave the speech, it was almost, like, in tears sort of thing, because, like, he wants the best for the club. So, like, he's definitely someone that loves the club. And I remember leaving that speech that he gave, and not just me, but all the players thinking, like, if the owner loves the club and he puts his all into the club, and he be getting abuse as well, like we have to at least give 100% the same way he does for the club. So, yeah, no, they do come, they do get in touch. Well, I don't know about now, but he was in touch with the players, a couple of players, and definitely Frank Lampard as well.
And in terms of, like, if you had to give, like, a message to the Everton fans for their support this season, what would you say?
I know, like I say, I know it's difficult because obviously we know, like, we can do better. They know we can do better. But just continue sticking by us, especially, like, the support we got last season when they were coming to our training ground.
Yeah.
It was, hey, I've never seen anything like that.
How did that make you feel? Like,
we're going into the game is gassed. We're going into the games gassed. Obviously, it's illegal to bring them flares.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
but
yeah.
But we'll be like, yeah, bring them, man. Bring them. Anyways, this is going to get aired. People don't shoot me for this. But, like, we used to get gassed. They're bringing flares. Everton, they're banging the bus. Obviously, not, I want to say they're vandalizing, but they're banging the bus. Saying, Everton. So we used to get gassed.
Okay.
So if they're able to match that energy they brought last season towards the end and bring it going forward, like, Everton, it helped us a lot. We almost felt like it was 12 people on the pitch. So, yeah.
Yeah, last one on Everton from me is your contract ends 2024. You know, there's a lot of talk about maybe Everton trying to initiate contract talks in terms of extending it because obviously they're impressed with the service that you've given to the club. Is that something you're thinking about, or do you want to sort of wait and see how the season plays out? Because as I said, Everton are embroiled in like a relegation battle before you make your mind up. So what's the latest on that for Everton fans that will be tuning in?
The same thing I've been told. My agent and my dad said focus on football. It's always what I get told, focus on football. Let them handle behind the scenes business. As long as you're doing your thing football-wise, then the contracts, all the teams, whatever you want to do, it'll make it easier. Your decision will be easier. So, yeah, my daddy ain't really said much, my agent said much, and I prefer it like that because I don't want to be hearing, they want you for, I don't know, 50 million a week or something. Like, I just rather focus on football.
So in terms of, even I saw recently that there was interest from Turkey, maybe Fenerbahce. Was that something that came to you?
No, I just see it like, first of all, I think I posted on Instagram, I'm just seeing bare comments. I'm thinking, what? Like, I didn't even know anything about it. Then I'm just getting added on Twitter. Some of my boys like, right, let's go to Turkey. Thinking, nah, bro, the reason you might need to go to Turkey is for teeth or hairline or something. But nah, so that's what I was a bit rattled. But obviously, it's always nice when you're getting interest from another team. But nah, like, just continued with football. I didn't know anything about it.
So, like, how do you sort of, again, look at your career, because you're performing in like a struggling team. And again, I'm not saying you want to leave Everton or stuff like that, but every footballer wants to play at the highest level possible. Like, you're posting up dope stats for a struggling team. So, like, for you, is the ambition, again, you've played in Europe, you've scored in Europa League finals, played in the Champions League. Is that something that's going to be factored into your decision when you're offered something or if you're not offered something?
Yeah, of course. I mean, like I said with Anthony Gordon, you want to, football's a short career, you want to play in the highest leagues, you want to be the best you can be, sort of thing. So it will play a part, because I want to, like, especially if I've had the chance to play in Champions League, if I've had the chance to play in Europa League, I want to get that feeling again. I wanted to do it with Everton. I want to do it with Everton because we do have the players that should be challenging for that. And when I was signing, like, that was what the ambition was. So yeah, it will play a part, but I don't know. It's early day, I don't know.
So in terms of, again, what you were sold in terms of the vision from Everton and how it sort of transpired, if you were to give it a marker out of 10 in terms of what you've experienced, what would you give?
It took me 3 years to play the position I wanted to play. And unfortunately, we're not challenging for Europe. So from what I've been told to where we are, of course, it's not where I thought I'd be. But it is, it's like, I have no regrets. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to, I do enjoy the challenge going into games, like, to prove a point that we should be winning. I want to win games, because that feeling of winning a game is undefeatable. So I don't mind this challenge.
And that's why we love sport, because you can't predict it.
You can't predict it.
You can say whatever you want to say, but you can't predict it. So obviously you want to move on to your international career. Talk to us about representing Nigeria, bro.
Crazy. I'm even going there soon, playing Guinea-Bissau. Can't wait, because it's been a minute. Playing for Nige, like, it's almost like playing in a carnival, like in a festival, like, bare trumpets, bare fans, just singing. It's almost like there's three choirs that was always battling each other, singing different songs. And then, yeah, man, I enjoy playing for Nigeria. I really do.
Yeah, because I would say you kind of set a trend out of the boys from the diaspora, you know, like, repping Nige. Obviously, after you, there's Ola, there's Joe Rebo, Ademola Lookman, all these men are from like ends. So what made you kind of make that decision to like play for Nige?
So I played for England 16, 17, 18, 19. Then I stopped getting called up. And then Nigeria approached me to come and try for the Olympics. And I said, yeah, why not? Like, let me see what it's like. And I really enjoyed it. But just to get, I think, I don't know if the permit or something that cleared by FIFA to play took a long time. And then I got called to go to the Olympics, but Arsene Wenger said, no, like, I really have you in my plans. And Olympics goes into the start of the season. So when I saw that, and I thought, I'm going to really miss a chance to play. But Arsene Wenger said, like, I need you. So it's a big statement saying, Arsene Wenger saying he's going to need you for Arsenal. Mm-hmm. So I did understand it. But yeah, then ever since then, I got called for the first team for Nige, and I just thought, whoa, like...
We've got, again, one of the best strikers in the world right now, yeah, Victor Osimhen. Bro, he's doing his thing at Napoli. You understand what I'm saying? Like, he's being linked to what? Man United, Chelsea, like, even talking about him. What's your take on him?
He's someone I really respect, by the way, because, like, when he first got called up to Nigerian national team, like, no one really took him in. Like, he always, see how he works hard. Like,
yeah.
Ducks down every ball. Even if it's going off the pitch, he'll chase that ball. And, like, even two AFCONs ago, like, he got injured, but then there's people like, get up, Victor. You're always on the floor. Well, like, he will still work hard. He won't complain, just work hard. So, like, for him to get to where he is now, Napoli's main man, like, everyone just has their eyes on, like, we've seen it from time. Like, we've seen him. Of course, there was that element where maybe people say he's a bit rash in front of him, he needs to compose himself. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, always getting there and he won't stop, he won't stop. So that's why he's someone I respect. And the thing is, like I said, Onana, there's so much more to come from him. He's still young.
So what do you think he's going to be in the Prem in the summer? Like, cause
I don't know. Mm. I actually don't know. It would be nice.
Has he text you? So, what's the Premier League like, Alex?
He has asked. All of them overseas, like they're playing different leagues, ask. Like, they always want to know what it's like to play. Because obviously, Premier League is the most like...
Yeah, in Nigeria, is like, that's the promised land. Yeah. I want to make it to Premier League.
So, like, I'm sure he probably has the ambition and dream to play in the Prem. So this next trip, he probably asked me, but... He's doing well, man.
Yeah,
man,
because each time he scores, he's added an extra million. Million. That Napoli owner's probably thinking,
somebody's sweet over there. Honestly.
No, but all jokes aside, like, on the real, what needs to change in terms of... No, on the real, because...
It's not even funny. Because we're not playing in the World Cup, pissed us off, you understand? We're seeing Qatar, you know the drip, you know the Niger boys.
We missed it. The Niger kid didn't even sell out this year because we're at the World Cup.
Why would it? We're not there,
bro.
Why would that? No, that one pained me, you know, because I couldn't even go to play against Ghana because I had that red card in AFCON. So I was watching with my boys at home, thinking, yeah, like, I'm even going to leak something. We're watching, like, trying to create a documentary, innit?
Okay,
because we're thinking, yes, this is an opportunity, we're going to get there. Then we didn't even lose, we drew 1-1. And like, yeah, man, Thomas Partey, you done that goal. So like, I remember everyone in my room, in my house, were just like this.
Yeah, stressed.
But yeah, no, like, that one, I don't know for that one, because like, it was a 1-1 draw. So like, we didn't lose, but like.
I swear they just recently changed the rules as well. Before that.
Yeah.
Even like Leon Belonga. You were talking about George.
No comment on that one, bro. Let me not get in trouble for that one.
Nah, but on the real, like, as we say, you're like one of the stars of our generation. You're one of the faces of Nigeria. You understand? When people talk about the Nigerian national team, you see Wobi, he's the playmaker. He makes things happen. Like, so you're an authority. So like, for us fans, us, you know, Nigeria fans, what can you say today, like, to make us feel confident about the future? Because we're watching these tournaments thinking, we got our Nige kit out, we're going to win this, we should be in the final, we should be dominating, you understand? We've got the talent, we've got Joe Aribo, Aterbo.
Our team is Osimhen, still young.
Ademola Lookman, Chukwueze,
keep naming them.
Everyone,
we're still young. So like, we still like, all the team, for example, Senegal, like, they're all like,
yeah, Mane's at 30. Grown. Ghana,
we still have a lot to learn. Like, even as a team, learn about ourselves. The team's still young. That's what one thing I can promise Nigerian fans, that as much as the talent is still there, we're still young, we're still learning the game. So like, only Lord knows where we could be in a couple of years' time. So just be patient, because we are trying. Be patient.
Mm. So, okay, you're trying. But in terms of, do you think you need that assistance from above in terms of, okay, infrastructure? Because that's what obviously Leon was talking about. And we speak a lot about the development of Nigerian football because we want to see it grow.
Yeah.
You understand? So do you need that sort of synergy to match the ability? You need that governance.
I'm not going to say something that gets me in trouble. But like, yeah, for example, like our pitch, we don't know if we're going to have a nice pitch when we play. Like, obviously we've got a new coach now, and We played Sierra Leone, but we just about beat them 2-1, difficult game. Then we played Sao Tome and beat them 10-0, but we played on a great pitch. A lot of us play in Europe now, so like, we're playing on great pitches where it's easy to just manipulate the ball, let the ball do the work, play freely. If we had that in Nigeria, I feel like it would be difficult to beat us. I don't think, I'm confident enough to say that not many teams can beat us. So like, to start with, just for example, like, having a good pitch, if you have that, I feel like we'll be unstoppable.
So when you say that, do you mean like as in a home stadium or like a St. George's?
Just a pitch of grass.
So you're not even asking for much.
Yeah, just a bench. Just a pitch of grass, level grass, no crops. Like, get me, just grass, innit?
Okay, because when Leon came on, he was saying that we need like something like a St. George's Park where there's like a
complex. Yeah, at least we could. But that's the thing about Nigeria. Like, I don't know what goes on behind, but we could end up playing in Asaba. I could play in Lagos, you can play in Abuja, you can play anywhere, we don't know. But like, at the same time, I do get where they come from. Everyone wants to watch Nigeria, and Nigeria's quite a big nation, but at the same time, it would be nice to have a one base where we know this is going to be where we're playing. We know how it's going to be patterned. We know how it's going to be organized. Know the hotel we're staying at. Know the food we're getting. We know the service. So everything's easy, but we just are going to, I don't know where I'm going to play, sort of thing.
Yeah. Any more questions on Nige?
Yeah, so in terms of Nige, obviously, I know you're not a politician. Like, there's been, obviously, the whole election stuff and there's talk about rigging and stuff like that. And as I said, you're an authority for Nigeria. Do you have any sort of views on the election back home, or do you sort of...
I keep myself...
No comment.
I'm a footballer and that's what I focus on.
No, I had to ask, because obviously Nige people will ask. But yeah, I wanted to sort of move on to Arsenal now. Obviously, you're an ex-Arsenal player. We're seeing them doing madness in the league. Like, obviously, missing out on top four last season. This season, they're just blitzing through teams, man. Like,
honestly.
Odegaard, Saka, Eddie. They're just badding it up.
They done us recently as well.
Yeah, bro. That one
pained me. As much as like I like Arsenal, that one pained me. Boy.
So, like, in terms of the atmosphere and the air, like, did you feel, ooh, this Arsenal's different? Because it's when you left, there was this whole Emery stuff. Fans were disenfranchised.
Very, very different. Even when they come to us and they lost, fans, like, it's just so, they're so positive. Like, obviously, when I was there, we're about to leave, like, it was just a bit toxic. Like, fans, like,
animosity. They used to call it,
I think, the toilet or something, the Emirates, because, or the library, or the library, that one got
used a lot. But, like, now, like, even when we're playing there, it took them a while to break us down, but then before that, there was just constant cheering. Like, you know, Arsenal was a team that has the ball, so they'd be doing, hey, even if it's 0-0. So, yeah, no, the atmosphere has definitely changed. But like, I feel like that's results again. Like, they've played so well all season, they're getting results. Of course they're going to be on board.
So do you follow them, like, in terms of their results? Obviously you're ex-player. Like, so are you sort of thinking, oh yeah, another win, I want them to win the league? Like, are you, or you're just more focused on, I'm an Everton player.
I focus on myself first, of course, like, but like at the same time, like, because I do follow them on social, I do see what they're on. Like, I want them to do well, but my main focus, like, it's going to sound mental, like, all us fans might hate me, but I wanted to beat them.
Yeah, of course, that's natural.
I wanted to beat them.
I'm happy that we lost.
We got smacked up 4-0. But no, I want him to do well though.
And talk to us about Saka, because when I watch this guy, it's another one. I'm gonna repeat the gist. He can be whatever he wants to be. Like, for me, probably the player of the season with Odegaard and Erling Haaland, in my opinion. When you watch him play, like, and he sees development, how proud are you, bro?
Happy for him, man. Really, really happy. Because not only, like, he's a great player, but off the pitch, the most respectful, humble guy. Like,
So what is it about him? Because you hear this all the time. You hear him, oh, such a lovely kid. Around, oh, such a nice boy. What is it? Like, when you break it down to the granular detail, what is it about Bukayo?
Like, when you first come up to train first, you never complained. All the players, like, gave him that respect. Like, and because he was doing his thing in training, like, you just know, like, I know some players will get a bit offended because, like, he's a young man dribbling.
What, was he ripping up?
What?
Do you remember?
But the thing is that there's a lot of Arsenal youngsters that are cold, and he was raw then. So that left foot, just jinky, go past a few, man. Like, so, like, now he's doing it on a consistent basis. Like, we've seen it. I've seen it anyway. And, like, because as well as, like, not only is, like I say, he's a great player, he's humble. Like, he was eager to learn. He listens, doesn't argue back. Like, he treats, like, for example, treating the dinner ladies the same way you treat us, man. Like, I'm happy for him, man. Deserves it and deserves more. And even look, his family and my family used to speak on a regular basis. Nigerian.
Yeah. Like, bro, I'm happy for him. Jollof rice. They're bonded.
I'm happy for him, man. I'm happy for that guy.
Yeah, so what about Eddie? Because obviously you're all sort of stable mates at the same agency. Yeah. Like, you know, watching him rise. Yeah. Again, Eddie. Obviously people sort of say we helped him on the platform when he came on. Then after that,
I wait for mine then.
But I give Eddie the credit. You know, that's why I tell him, like, listen, you got a part of the work. He spoke, he taught, he delivered. You understand?
No, so Eddie is someone who believes in himself from young. Eddie gets goals, guaranteed. Always gets goals. So yeah, it's also going to be hard to be the main striker for Arsenal. They've got Gabriel Jesus, he's like talented though, before they had Lacazette, Aubameyang. So like, he's been someone that's been patient. He had to go on loan. He still gets goals, and like, he won't stop working. That's something that I'm sure Arteta appreciates with him. Like, even if he's not playing,
he'll run
in training. He'll make sure he's getting goals. You make sure he's knocking on doors. So you, even though he's not playing, you know he's there. So yeah, that's one thing about Eddie, man. Hungry. One of very, very hungry.
Are Arsenal going to win the league?
Yeah, I believe so. I want them to, be fair.
And you know what? The last player I wanted to ask you on was Reece Nelson, because he's took like a different path where he had mad promise, but he hasn't really had the biggest opportunity at Arsenal, where he's had a consistent run of games. And obviously you see him get that last minute winner against Bournemouth the other day. When you saw that, like, how proud were you?
Yeah, because he's another Arsenal product. Like, he's another one in training. Like, he's one's a joke in training. Like, he used to
twist man up. Yeah,
bare tricks. Although sometimes with him, like, they'll say to him, like, Reece is only free touch, and he'll still be twisting up, man. But it'll be creating a chance when, like, he's only free touch. But with him, like, he's another one that has that raw street ability. So, like, and I have to give it to him. Someone that's been patient. Like, I think before we played them, and he went even, I don't think he even played, like, he was just chilling. So, like,
man, just chilling, you know.
I have to respect him. Like, came on, he's delivered. Every time he's come on to play, he's delivered. I think he's been the most impactful sub this season.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, I have to give it to him to
I remember that Bournemouth game, innit? Like, I checked Arsenal 2-0 down. Then I refreshed the YouTube algorithm. I saw him celebrating 3-2. I'm like, Arsenal, they're doing this.
Yeah,
they're.
Like, you get me? For someone to be able to do that, and you're not playing regularly, to have that elite mindset to know that you're going into a game and I'm going to do my thing, make sure, like, I help the team win. I have to rate it.
Because we don't want to take too much of your time, and we've got like a train to catch as we're stuck in Manchester. And but in terms of you, I want to end on you, bro. Like, you've had a successful career so far. Like, you know, you've come from the ends, you've made it out, you supported your family and stuff, you're doing your thing. So obviously I respect you for that. But in terms of your personal career, like, what's your aims and objectives? Because, you know, you're going to be 27 in a couple of months.
Still young, but these are the prime ages.
Yeah.
You
know, yeah.
Some people are in their 30s.
He's got six weeks left of his 20s. Yeah, so he's trying to get that in every part. He's cashing in. But yeah, like, in terms of, yeah, like, where do you want your career to go to? Because I see someone with ability. You're maturing like a fine wine. You're getting better as you age. You understand what I'm saying? So what do you want to achieve?
Like, I want to play, like, I've played Champions League, I had that taste. I want to get back playing there again. I want to play in the best competitions possible. I want to play in another World Cup, maybe another two. I want to win the African Cup of Nations. Nigeria was close, came third once. So I'd like to be involved in as many competitions and earn some personal trophies for myself. Like, of course, it's hard to get assists when, you know, people like De Bruyne on.
Yeah, and these man, like, yeah. And they're playing at the, no disrespect, but they're playing with clubs, world class.
Yeah, so... So yeah, like, I would like to be amongst that one day. That's everyone's dream. So hopefully one day I can fulfil that.
And Everton fans will sort of be watching and thinking, oh, Alex Iwobi, like, is there any news in terms of your future? Like, he's our best player right now. So what are you thinking in terms of the next 12 months? Because the clock's ticking on your contract. I call it the danger zone. When you're within that last 18 months, there's movement one way. It's either the club cash in or you get that new contract. You understand? Yeah. So what can you say to Everton fans?
All I can say is that I'm not really paying attention to that. I'm just focused about making sure Everton stays in the Premier League and push on. So in terms of contract, you guys are going to have to wait, because I'm still waiting. I don't know what's going on.
Cool.
Yeah, I must say, bro, you've been...
Yeah. I think again.
Best podcast
I've ever. All you other guys that you're podcasting.
No, for real. Like, it's when we have certain man, especially from South, like Ezzy, Eddie, just something clicks. It's just
I like podcasts like this where I could just chill and just talk how and, like, relax. Like, I like this sort of. Don't want to say, like, because people in some interviews just feels like you're getting the same answers over again and again.
So,
like,
what have you had to think here? Has this challenge you think, oh, you know what, this is just
no, because, like, I feel like I'm just talking to my boys. I feel like I'm just chilling, innit?
Yeah.
Whereas interviews, you have to say, yeah, we've done very well, man. Like, we're going to improve the season. Like,
take each game as it comes. Another 3 points.
We're battling hard. But here, like, I'm just chill. Like, I just talk whoever I want to talk. So, if podcasts like this, like, I enjoy it. And I know people love coming on, feel comfortable to talk however they want to talk.
I love my bro.
So obviously, last one before we wrap up, life outside of football, because we know you're a man of many,
man of culture, drip, fashion, content creation.
Talk to us about what you do outside of the game.
Outside of the game, I like to enjoy a lot. My boys, my family, everyone knows. Dabble in music part time. Started to create a few things on YouTube. I like to get engaged in charities and communities, because, like, I want everyone to have, like, I know with what I can do with my football, just me, even me going somewhere, like, it can change someone's life. And I only learned that, like, recently. So, like, as much as I can do to help out, but I just like to enjoy as well. So that's me. I do like fashion as well sometimes. We came all in black today, kept it simple.
Yeah.
Clean.
So, yeah. So you get me? Like, I just like to enjoy life. Mm. That's how my mum and dad want me to live. I want my parents to enjoy, my sister to enjoy. So that's me, man.
So in terms of music, you said you create me. What capacity is that? Producing? Is that rapping? Is that getting behind the mic? Are we going to see you making some video on GRM Daily soon? Hey. Like, what capacity?
Obviously, it's difficult to, because you have to get the balance. You don't want to do that and then, like, your football's not going well, so you need to focus on football.
But I think that's a mentality that needs to get weeded out.
No disrespect, but, like, if your football's doing the talking as well, like, for example, no one says anything to Benzema for when posting with a Bugatti. No one says nothing to Memphis when Memphis is bagging for Atletico Madrid. Like, no one says nothing. Rafa Leão doing music videos, but, like, he's, no disrespect to Tottenham, but he's, like, doing his thing against Tottenham, playing well, getting man of the match performances.
That was an Arsenal dig right there to Tottenham.
No. Like, Rafa Leão kids, man. No digs. I keep it respectful to all the Tottenham men out there. But if your football's in the talking, like, enjoy your life. Like, that's why I have to get that balance. As much as I'm enjoying life privately, I'm not going to show, like, me doing music when Everton not doing well. I have to have respect for Everton as well.
So in terms of, like, charity as well, I think that's big.
Very big, yeah.
People don't really talk about it. Again, there's this perception. Obviously, we don't wear that hat. There's our footballers earning X amount of money. Look at them. You understand? We don't think like that. But in terms of charity, like, what are you doing in terms of giving back? Like, what sort of initiatives are you involved in?
So, for example, recently, me and my Project 7 team lot,
Big up
the team. We got the mandem in the back.
Acting shy.
In the group chat. He's in the group chat.
Don't even go and expose him now. It's actually his local team that recently we sponsored kit for. So, like, I even got the opportunity to go see them, and they even came to watch one of my. What game was it? They come.
Leeds.
And we won. So they come to watch the game.
They brought you the luck, yeah?
Yeah, so there's a bag of them. There was, like, how many, like, 30 man, 20 man. There's bears of them come to the game. So, like, sponsoring kits, went to Ireland for a minority group that they held, like, a tournament. So for me just to go there, show face support, pick it up. Went to see the mayor of Ireland. So, like, yeah, like, just doing a lot of things like that. But it's just the beginning. I want to get involved in a lot more and help out as many ways as I can.
Because I think football as well, like, while you have your relevance, you're still young, you need to be setting up for the future, of course, if you understand. So, like, in terms of investments outside of the game, I always ask footballers, like, what are you doing? Because you hear so many stories, like, you've heard examples of players earn X, Y, and Z, and within 5-6 years, you're like, from grace kind of thing. Yeah. So, like, what are you personally doing to protect your wealth?
All my boys know me, straight houses. I'm not going to say how many I've got, but I've got a lot. And I'm grateful because my dad helped me from early. My uncle was the one that JJ Culture, like, he showed me from early. Like, as soon as you're getting paid, houses, that is the most reliable way. Some people have their own, like, crypto and all of that. Yeah. But my dad told me, like, stick to houses.
Because you can see it, you can feel it, you can go in it, you can visit it. Yeah, you can't just take a house and
Some people probably say watches. Watches, I'm still learning about it and all of that. And, like, art, like, galleries, like, I bought some sculptures a couple months ago or something like that. But my dad always says that houses is the best way, and I've got a few still.
No, that's good. What, hair and abroad? Like,
actually, my dad said, Nige life is run if it's done well, but where we don't know too much or enough to know that it's going to be an investment. I haven't done it yet. Emphasis on yet. I don't know, I might do it. But yeah, no, there's a lot in ends, a lot in, like, Essex, new builds and... Yeah.
Jeez, no, I love that, man. Yeah, I just love seeing players, like, sort themselves out, man. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. Obviously, last one before our closing tradition. In terms of music, speaking of Nige, we see Afrobeats dominating the scene at the minute. Who are you messing with?
Who am I messing with right now? I've always been a big Wizkid fan.
Mm-hmm.
Always been a big Wizkid fan.
Burner, I know Dot's thinking Wiz or Burner. I know.
My guy's Ashake.
Really?
Yeah, that's my guy.
Everyone loves Asake still. Everyone loves him. Omale, Buju.
Yeah.
Buju. Yeah, there's a few to be fair, but obviously I'll say between my favourite right now, Buju and Wizkid.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so like I'm done. As I said, bro, you've been so open, transparent. I think fans, football fans, are gonna love the insight because that's what we try and do on this platform.
Yeah.
Give a unique spin on the game. And I think you've given that, man. Like Everton fans are gonna love what you've said. Again, they always tell us that Alex, he's been our best player this season. He's the one, if we're to pick one player befitting of wearing the shirt, it's Alex Iwobi. 110% each game, 7 assists, plays wherever the manager wants him, gives, you know, 100%. So, like, big up to you, man.
Thanks, bro.
Obviously, we wish you success for the season. Yeah, man, and obviously, we're Liverpool fans, so, you know, no, I add that. Yeah, right at the end. So,
after about Everton fans, they're not going to come for you. Honestly.
No, but on the real, there's a closing tradition on this podcast where we ask the guests that we're interviewing to recommend a potential guest in football to come onto the platform after experiencing the TBG experience. So if you had to recommend a guest, it could be anyone in football that you will help us. And we're going to get onto you, this platform. Who would it be?
There's two people I'm going to recommend. In fact, three. Damari Gray, because I'm with him every day. His story would definitely be one that you guys enjoy. Ola Aina, someone that I grew
up with. Ola, Bermondsey, Uncle Femi.
Ola
grew up. He used to take us to school in the Peugeot, Black Peugeot. We grew up in Bermondsey.
So you'll be even be the if you
obviously I got Ola's number, but Ola's just lax with it. He's
Ola's acting brand new.
Yeah, man.
Because I think you man that you want to travel anywhere. You man go to Turin then.
No, but let me do something with Ola. So apart from Ola, I think Ola will happen.
Damari Gray, Ola Aina, and I say Chi Backbone.
Chuba's having a glow up. He's having a hot boy summer. He's a hot boy winner. He's on fire.
Yeah, obviously Chuba and Ola I grew up with. So I'll say those two. Dimi as well.
Cool. So we're going to leave it there. That's another episode of the Beautiful Game Podcast. Look, shout out to Alex. He's been an amazing guest.
Been elite.
Over and out. Peace.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.